are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Oh yeah.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of, and now I don't know what week it was, 14th of December to the 20th of December, 2020. And we're going to start, as long as we're not interrupted by any more cups of tea, with Mr. Osumatsu, episode 10, Zansu and Werewolf. So the first half is, we've got Chibita, Decapan, Flag Boy, Big Mouth Guy.
Dayon and Hadabo.
Yeah, they are depressed about the state of Japan, about having to be in quarantine, social distancing. And I was like, is this the first anime to actually comment on the real world?
Yeah, that I know of, I suppose. Let's be real, they knew about, been knowing about this since like the start of the year, pretty much.
Yes.
And they could have had time to just, like, this is going to be just like a fun, funny one, just need to fit into the order of the kind of continuity we're doing on the other one. So we put this in and get a bit of topical humor in for some out. It could be the new South Park.
Mm-hmm. And they run across Iyami, who's built himself a homemade Zansu course, which is definitely not Sasuke. It's legally distinct.
Hanzo. Naruto.
And
what he went off to do and find himself after the robots the last time.
But he basically gets them all in and they're going to take part, and this is going to solve Japan's problems. The new season of Zansu. If somebody can complete the obstacle course, then this Japan will be okay again.
They'll see us and put their hopes and dreams into us, and when we achieve it, they can achieve it.
Also, go away to keep fit and have an activity from when you're locked up indoors. Or you can go to your own ready-made obstacle course that you'd made out of junk, either. But as long as it's away from other people, you're good.
Mm. And of course, they're met with the first two guys fall at the first hurdle.
It's just like they're really doing it in the whole montage. They're climbing up their ramps and they're jumping across the bouncy balls. They're going to do it. Take a bag, it's like a charity horse, like, oh no, and you double it as well.
Chibita gets a bit further, Dion gets a bit further, Iyami manages to complete the first course, and then immediately fails on the second course in a great bit of cartoon physics.
Not even immediately fails, it's like that was way too long a fucking jump. I guess it's a swing.
The ramp, the platform that he trained on was a good 2 meters shorter than the official one. And the lads told him, "Nah, man, you can't be cutting corners here. It's going to count later." And I said, "Nah, I'll do it on the day. It's fine."
And we get the cartoon swim to the cliff edge, which gets him nowhere before he falls. And so Japan is doomed. But who is that? Who is that to save the day? It's the return of their F6, aren't they? That's the
What does F stand for again?
I can't remember.
Yeah,
but it's the handsome versions of the brothers, the idol versions,
wildly incestuous versions.
Yes, they have a go, and they also continually fail, but they help each other, and they just bend the rules for them.
Yeah, initially all our boys are like, wait, they didn't even fucking register. This is bullshit. You got to be in at the start. You can't just start on round two. This is crap. And then it's like, what? He just walked out of the water and took another fucking goal. You can't do that.
Like, everyone's into it. And Chibita has one, like, grousing about it. But then it's like, everyone's like, could he come on, lads? You can do it. It's like, yeah, maybe they really can. He gets into it as well.
Swept up in the forever. Yeah, gets along.
Like,
with
even the announcers
the
are
consistent
going.
Consistent clapping. Yeah.
Even the announcers are going, like, we've already gone way past the regulation time limit, but we just want to see the boys finish for us.
Oh, dear.
They also appear to continually be getting killed towards the end of it.
They continually end up in sexually compromised positions where they're just about to kiss. They continually being murdered. They lose all their clothes.
That's also why you want to keep it going. You know, it's like, it isn't really inside the rules, but we'll allow this just once.
Yeah, and the whole of Japan celebrates them as they have completed this task, which they were just allowed to complete.
Yeah.
Rather than actually competing the competition.
We achieved nothing, but we cheated until we did, so, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, always very du jour when you do something every day that you do regularly. It could be your job, it could be your hobby you've done for half your life, and it's all that. When a celebrity does it, though, it's special. Yeah. And even if they're shite at it, it's like, well, they give it a good try. They're only human as well.
Yeah.
Is there celebrity editions of Sasuke where they've made it easier for people?
I would.
A bit like how celebrity masterminds, they ask easier questions than the real ones.
I would like to compare and contrast this, because we left Channel 4 on there the other week and the celebrity Crystal Maze came on. I need to see if the games in the regular civilian edition are more difficult. Because, you know, they want to win money for charity, so they might throw a few softballs there, all right.
Then we cut to a new story where we see Karamatsu in a smoking jacket, listening to a gramophone, drinking a massive glass of booze. And then the next morning, his skeleton is discovered.
He's been eaten.
And at this point, I was like, oh, this reminds me of the murder mystery parody they did in the in the first season.
Oh, yeah.
Little was I to know.
That's what it was. Well,
but that is exactly what it
was. A different
going.
Version, a different game. Yeah.
Yes. And then it becomes this game of werewolf between four of the brothers and a werewolf.
Which one of us is the werewolf? Werewolf, who do you think it might be?
Not me, Wolf.
Not me, Wolf.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I had too much to eat last night. I've got indigestion. His lips are smeared with blood.
He is clearly a brown, fuzzy werewolf man.
His top is a wolf there in the top pocket.
Yeah.
That could just be a brand name, though. You know, it's just a coincidence. I happen to be playing this.
I feel like this is appropriate, though. It's like, okay, we all knew that Ishimatsu is the werewolf, but they're such dicks that they're more concerned with fucking each other over than playing the game properly.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are playing the game properly as well. It's just ignoring the obvious clue. Because Charumatsu's playing the traitor, who's secretly on the side of the werewolf.
Yeah.
And Totti's the fortune teller. So when Totti reveals that he's the fortune teller, that's when Charumatsu reveals that I'm also the fortune teller. And the others have to go, well, one of these. Basically, they're all arguing about who's going to be executed. And then finally, Osamatsu reveals that he's got a separate role. He's not a villager after all. He is calming detective Osamatsu. Do you remember from 5 years ago?
Yeah, none of the cast seem to remember, which is pretty funny.
No.
It's like, he looks familiar. What's who's this guy?
They vaguely recall him. Like, he's like solved over 2,000... Well, no, he's taken over 2,000 cases. He hasn't solved a single one. But he's sort of just... He's there to, like, chill the vibe a little bit. People, things are getting too tense like they are right now. We're trying to hang somebody. You know, he's just turned the camera and down. So, let's see him do his thing. Let's see what he's got.
But yeah, and then there's a very long section of him calming everybody down to the point where eventually they've formed a band and they invite
the village in, and a bunch of the village is werewolves.
Yes. There's a man on a mission gag in there as well, because I think the fans of the band have got man with a mission written on the t-shirt.
That's good.
Yeah, everything looks fine. Kami Detective Osamatsu's job here is done, and he bids them all a farewell. And you can see the punchline coming a mile off, but it's nonetheless hilarious.
That happens every night in a game of werewolf. Yeah.
What a night, though. You know, just go to see a cool class band, make a few friends, have your bones piled up like they're exploding off an ossuary the next morning. It's heartwarming.
Yeah, we just see this massive pile of bones of all the villagers and then all the werewolves lying on their backs, patting their massive stomachs. Ah, this was a good episode. This was, might be my favourite one so far in terms of just being good from top to bottom. I like both sketches. It was a lot of fun. It had something to do with those robots were nowhere to be seen in either story.
Yeah.
There was a bit of that, just like, very raw cynicism coming in here. Just that, like, really dim view of certain sections of humanity. And that other stuff with the robots, it feels like it's trying to, I don't know, be a very fair and balanced. We're trying to be a very softy, softy
approach. It's trying to be analysis of it, it doesn't have much to say with it, yeah. Or it feels like it doesn't have much to say with it.
But just let them do it. Let them,
let them do the thing that we liked about the show.
Yeah. Anyways.
And the preview tries to make you think that it's an isekai parody, but it's not. It's about pizza, apparently, next week.
Robots find out what pizza is. Great.
I'm not as down on those robots as I was, but there's definitely a difference when they're not there, in that it is more like what the series used to be. Having said that, I still think the robots being there also prevented it from being some of the worst sketches in the previous series. Or it's probably stopping them reusing too many previous gags.
Yeah.
Though, obviously, this episode was them reusing two previous gags, but they've kept their powder dry. Obviously, the detective one, they've kept their powder dry for 5 years on that one.
They haven't overused it, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Then we've got Golden Kamuy, episode 35, Sin and Impurity.
This one got it all.
Yeah, all the threads coming together. As Agata's one messed up cat. That is for sure.
So good though. It gives you chills. Not just because they're walking across an ice field.
Yeah. Usurper's like trying to figure out. She's trying to figure out why she hadn't remembered the stuff with her dad's other name before, and she's thinking that she was deliberately trying to not to remember.
She was kind of blocking the rough memories attached to that, and not trying to think about it, so therefore not solving the puzzle. Yeah.
And Ogata says, I'll go off with Usurper and we'll find some firewood, and this is just his ploy to try and convince her.
The amount of times he looks at her going like, I can tell you're thinking right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I'll get her to tell me what the code is. I'll convince her with a bunch of heart truths and lies.
The amount of things he was saying was like, this is absolutely true. This is absolutely true. This is absolutely true. But you're leaving out a key detail, like it's like, oh, he actually knows where Sugimoto was shot. It was him giving the order to do it. You didn't say, you did it, buddy. You left that part conveniently fucking out.
It's dangerous. You know, we got to get out of here. You know, I promised Sugimoto before. You know, he was dying in my arm. And he said, oh, you got to take care of a serpent for me. It's like, oh, yeah, well, that's nice. Oh, I just wish before I died, I could have one last meal. And it's like,
well, it's actually, she asked him, it's like, well, oh, he must have said something about the thing he wanted to eat. And it's like, he's like, that's right. He did say something about that. He's like, okay, what would Sugimoto say? Like, testing him kind of thing.
Yeah. Gets it wrong, though. It's like, he never said that. He told me before, and I know this for a cold, tart truth for you, Ogata, that he would have said dried persimmons. Gotcha.
Gotcha. So you might have got me, but now I'm going to unload all my brother issues on you. Double dog dare you to kill me.
And if you don't kill me, that'll just make me mad enough to kill you. So
yeah. It's really fun chilling then, you know, she says, just, no, I'm not going to draw down you. I'm not the kind of programming kick in. You can see a flash over his eyes and says, no, everybody kills everybody else. I know this for a truth. This is just the way the world is. Everybody kills everybody else. They don't feel guilty about it. Nope. And it's just the...
I refuse to believe you, pure child, that there's anyone pure in this world. Yeah.
It's just the robot starts going crazy. He can't compute this, and he's going to start shooting things.
But then Sugimoto is here, and there's a bit earlier on when he spies Sugimoto and he calls him Immortal Sugimoto, and I was like, is that the first time he's called him Immortal Sugimoto? I wonder,
like,
if it's
true at this stage.
I wonder if he'd be the one to deny the idea that he was immortal,
and now it's like the proof kind of, he's coming at me and I shot him in the fucking head, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious if that, because it seemed odd coming out of his mouth, so I don't know whether he's ever called him that before. Yeah, so then Sugimoto shows up, shouts Ogata, which surprises Usurpa, and she ends up shooting the poison arrow into his eye.
Like, but the way it contrasts, like, because it flashes back to that thing of Sugimoto, like, about to kill Ogata when...
Yes.
Ogata's like, remember when you stopped Sugimoto from killing me, huh? Fucking regretting that now, aren't you? Which means, you know, you got blood on your hands, or you wanted to have blood on your hands, kind of thing. Or, you know what I mean? You want to have blood on your hands now, that kind of thing. But the way it's contrasting this, where Sugimoto jumps him and then starts, like, sucking the poison out of the wound.
That's fucking rad. Well, I was even told what we just, like, Dave Shibber's just then, like, he gets the arrow in the eye. I'm like, oh, fuck, I just killed Ogata, and all. But then, I've seen people survive worse than this. Even dog, he's got it in the head as he's going down. The grin that just is plastered across his face is
I have corrupted
really unsettling.
My point, yeah,
really exactly. Unsettling. And then to save this guy.
Well, yes, I mean, like, the because... save it's to save Usurpa, not to save him, really.
Yes. But obviously, this is going to mess his character up even further.
Yep.
Down the line, because he's a sniper with one eye now. Everyone knows he can't be trusted in this part of the world.
I mean, like, in general, I would say.
General, yes, but it's totally, yeah, top to bottom defined. But that's not the only story.
That was the only thing in this fucking episode. Fucking top tier kind of episode. Just, like, fucking good foreshadowing, yes, and good, like, bringing the story back around and changing it. It's, like, just beautiful stuff. If that was the only bit, it would be great.
It's just, yeah, also have to have this reunion. It's just, like, in the middle of all that, this fucking all that stuff going down. It's like, oh, yeah, fucking Sugimoto and Usurpa have seen each other again, you know, like, one held out hope, but Maya thought, oh, he could be dead, I don't know for sure. And then he doesn't know she's safe, and then fucking we're together again. It's just like, don't want to break off the hug. It's like, it's okay, Usurpa, it's still coming back. You can let go now. But instead, I can't, my eyelid's frozen to your button. It's like, oh, shit.
Who can save us in this time of need? Who would have warm water on him at all times?
Shiraishi, I never thought I'd ask you this, but piss on her face.
Well, he asked him first, he's like, do you need to piss? He's like, yeah, I gotta piss real bad. Because he always needs to piss, or shit.
There is something up with that boy. He's got a very small bladder. Because even after he's pissed over the pair of them, later on in the episode, he says he needs to piss again.
Yeah.
It's funny what he's eating today. I guess his constitution is used to eating all of these, like, seal bladders and whale guts. It's completely, like, wrung him out in the inside or something.
Yeah. Maybe he's, like, whale blubber intolerant or something. Who fucking knows?
But yeah, it is like the most Golden Kamuy thing ever, of having, like, this this high tension character, this character arc which has played out throughout the entire series with Ogata.
Like, beautiful emotional stuff, like, you're worried about Usurpa, like, becoming corrupt and Sugimoto coming in to save her and her innocence and stuff. And then piss joke. And I laughed at that. That's not something I normally laughed at, but it really, like, oh, I needed that piss joke. Yeah.
Necessary. And also, throughout the episode, there's a seal which plays an important part in the story.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. Yes, because other parts of the story is Tsukishima runs into the daughter of the couple who took care of them earlier in the series. and every word which comes out of his mouth actually could apply to him as well.
Yeah.
It's really good, and it feels like he's realizing that about himself. It's just like,
yes.
Shit. Because, yeah, he's like, the lads are heading off, and he's like, come on, we got to help her. And he's like, no, we don't have time. And it's like, but, like, her parents saved my life. I can't fucking leave this in the lurch. And he's like, come on, the parents were waiting for you and shit. And he's like, I wanted to get out of that shithole. I would have taken any fucking excuse.
And it's she'd leave with anybody who would take her away from there.
She wasn't tricked. Like, oh. She was just like any fucking excuse to get out of that.
But that's you and Surumi, mate. You don't think about who you're following. You're just following him because you need somebody to follow.
Yeah.
And so he's seen the state that she's in because of this. And he's you can see it dawning on his face of like, I'm in the same boat here.
And then he's still shouting at her. It's just like, yeah, but you can't just let them know that you're not still okay. Because they're just waiting for you. They've got nothing else but waiting for you.
And Kiraranki gets a dagger returned to him.
Oh, that was just so badass. Just grabbing with Fontana Gaki, you know, they're on two henchmen smashing blocks of ice off each other. This is fun. You left us after your Abishui prison. Cha-cha!
Well, the way it was shot, like, it looks like one guy's been stabbed, but actually the other guy's been stabbed, and I was like, oh, that's very good.
Oh, yeah.
Such a good classic framing, yeah.
And he's still good to go after that, Kiraranki. He's just, like, stumbling across the snow, and then Koizo gives chase, fucking acrobat, and a devil with a saber. And Kiraranki's still holding them off.
Yeah, Tsukushima gets caught by a booby trap, doesn't he,
I saw that. Out of the way of the booby-trapped gun. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's who I saw. It's like that thing just carried out of place. It's like, I suppose we know that he's a dead man with explosives, but they didn't see something like that.
Yeah, because that's important to the final bit with Koito of him saying about he's trying to protect his men, as he sees, even though they don't consider him their superior officer.
He considers himself like superior, and therefore he must take care of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's like Kiraranki really doesn't know what he's bitten off with Koito.
And I love the way he's the guy who would have fucking gotten blown up by a grenade because he's an idiot, if not other people stepping in, and he would have fucking gotten taken out by him by sneaking around if it wasn't for that random fucking seal.
Yes. But we'd seen him earlier when they were they turned that ice flow into a boat. I did like that little bit with Shiraishi warning Sugimoto, the same warning that the other guys had warned him about, really smart, and he'd ignored.
And this is the thing he nearly fucking died doing. Also, Sugimoto has to turn himself into a sailboat, which is great. Great episode.
Great episode. And this is easily the best season they've done of this.
But they've built it up to so much. Like, I think that they've done a lot of the groundwork for this to be as good as it is. But I mean,
production wise.
Oh yeah, in general, as well. Yeah,
in a week where a lot of shows were hitting, they finally hit the crunch in the schedule, and unfortunately for some, it's on their final episode.
Yeah.
Because even the Mr. Osamatsu, the stuff with F6 was the worst F6 stuff we've seen in the series. The werewolf stuff looked great. It might have been an entirely different.
It was simple enough that they didn't really have to mess with it too much.
There's a couple of other shows where I was like, oh, well, I guess it's the 11th episode. They've hit the tornado of bad animation as opposed to the 4th, which might have happened in a non-COVID year.
I
can't believe it's just like one more of this and then it's already gone again. I think we just had it back and now it's gone.
Yeah.
And there's so much more of the comic still. I was like, oh, I didn't know that guy's still around. I was like, I thought that was the last we were going to see of that guy, but apparently that guy, he'll be in it again.
I may turn to that in my hour of need, but yeah, it's just like, it felt like there was almost too much packed into this, but it just felt like, these are just all of the various sticks of dynamite that have been put under this thing all going off at once. It's really, really good, even balance-wise, in terms of the story of his telling, because there was lots of kind of survival action like we got in this one, but interspersed with lots of them were really delving into the backstory of this, and
yeah,
all these parallels and what's going on to the main thing that are like so tightly related to us. And then other revelations, other things that cast all those into certain kind of doubt as well. It's been good at kind of trickling out, feeding out these details that keep you. Yeah, there's like kind of a mystery, like a kind of a chase. I mean, that's as well, it's like the chase is a bit more urgent now because we have a bit more to go on. So we're kind of just rushed to try and get through it now. It's like trying to find the One Piece. and it's doing a good job of kind of doting out those little things, but it's not giving you the whole thing just yet. But you can probably come to some kind of conclusion yourself. You're probably still missing a piece of it, but it's like, but then something might come along and upend that next time, and then all of your calculations are thrown out the window with it. But that's what makes it good. That's fucking. It's really good to get something that's like can subvert and second guess your expectations. It's outstanding.
It's such a good show. Like I'm always impressed by because you could easily drag this on. It's like we got to find another tattoo. You know, a tattoo of the fucking week, tattoo weirdo of the week. It'd be so easy to do, but it doesn't waste. Any part of the story carcass, I guess.
Well, also we've got to watch those OVAs about some of those tattoos.
I know. They're probably going to be great and probably very horny, but yeah.
Well, yeah, one of them is too offensive to put on television, so that's that. Next up is Jujutsu Kaisen episode 12, To You Someday. And you guys will have to tell me about it because I did not watch it. I watched something else this week.
Okay.
It's kind of what I bought here. I was thinking like, yeah, they kind of like done the this little arc here with about Maito and beating Junpei and the ramifications of that. They could have done this in by an episode less because this is going to go on again for one more episode, just so it ties out on like a big, I suppose, set piece before the end of the new year and before the end of the year rather. And so the new year starts out with the other thing with the tournament versus the sister school. So it feels like it's kind of getting squashed together in the wrong places sometimes. You're getting pulled further apart in the wrong places as well. You know, it's still looks like fine. Look at it all from like an action standpoint. You wouldn't mind seeing some of that action getting, you know, elaborated on in the animation. That's what we're here for after all. But it feels like it's trying to hit certain points. It feels very deliberate. That falls into this, like that we're trying to hit a certain point before we start into the new arc in next year. And you know, it's a problem we're trying to like articulate before. It seems like it gets a good bit of momentum, but then it's just kind of like it's a speed bump. It's kind of gather it back up again. It doesn't seem like it kind of pays off properly, you know.
Yeah, I feel like the pacing issues in this will be more forgivable when you have all of it and you can watch as much as you feel like. But week to week, it is kind of suffering for it, which is unfortunate because like it still looks great. I really like the fact that most of the action sequence takes place like on a stairwell, just outside that stairwell, and then on that same stairwell again. I'm just like, that's pretty good that they managed to use the environment quite well, but. Yeah, and again, visually looks great. I like all the actors on it. They're doing a great job. The look of it's great. But pacing wise, it's really suffering.
Yeah, yeah. But the production material that is there is good.
We
all know from reading this. And it's, you know, seeing some of the. Because we're getting to an emotional stage here, because Junpei's. He's turned the Jujutsu school shooter here, and he's like going after all the people who've been after him. And. Itadori from Yuji. Jesus, I got all my fucking names mixed up. Yuji's gonna step in. He's like, "Oh, you're my bud. Why are you doing
like
this?"
He's initially angry with him and kind of fighting him, but he kind of comes back around to being like, "All right, like I didn't know what you were kind of going through. I didn't understand, and I'm willing to talk it out. And you can join the school, and we could be school chums, and everything's gonna be okay, man. We'll work this out." Mm-hmm. That's when our curse shows up and he's like, "Hey, I heard you guys was making peace." No, not gonna happen.
Helpful hand on your shoulder here, and for Junpei gets transmogrified into one of the beasties, and then you know, because it's all like Mind always trying to, he's hearing about Yuji saying, oh, I'm gonna, like, you know, try and fight these things up. I don't want to kill anybody. I don't want to, like, you know, leave more bad feeling and negativity in the world that might lead to more cursing going on. That's what I want. I want to leave a world where people feel safe. Everyone's saying, I'm going to test you on that now. Let's see if you can fight off your friend that you've been turned into, like, a horrible abomination.
I did like how this episode kind of started in frame time. It starts before he hits the gym where everyone's knocked out. And it's basically like... his teacher on the phone going like, all right, do not engage, and getting hanged up. And it's like, he's going to fucking go do it. I better go there. And then our secretary guy is like, I can't let you do this, kid. And he's like, I'm just going to stand in the way, but there's literally nothing I can do to stop you. So you can just step past me. And it's like, God damn it.
Yeah. No one respects me. No one respects me, GG.
But it felt good. Like that they give the characters that kind of moment to try and stop him from doing this. Cause he's not emotionally prepared to lose this kid, and that's what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been having like a Yuji meet his like naivete about this head on.
Yeah.
He might have maybe topper because he's, that could be a little bit different. Maybe I got the guy potential. You know, I'm like the hero of the comic, right? Maybe I can do something to change about how we operate here. Maybe it doesn't need to be so much like grief and bloodshed and loss here. Maybe I can do this without having to kill anybody or anything like that, but he's been forced to get rid of that as well.
Yeah, he does, like, he says, like, hey, freaking curse inside me, how about you heal him like you did my heart that time? And the curse is like, no. And then the curse that he's being possessed by and the other curse just start laughing at him together, and it's like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
This sucks.
So they look like humans, they sound like humans, but they're still curses, and they don't operate in the same kind of logic that we do. It as well that Yuji, it's what you don't do. You've gotten too close to the case. You've been too deep on this one, kid. You can't be getting that with a case to be working on here. Otherwise, this is going to happen to you. These things are probably bread and butter for the rest of the Jujutsu Sorcerer society. But and so. This what kind of puts Yuji into that. He just kind of goes into a rage because he just kind of says it himself. You know, I just once shouted this, and everything I had said before, but I felt like a lie. But I felt so certain of it right then and there. I will kill you.
And your man taking the piss is like, sure, do you mean exercise me? And you know, getting his head kicked in is like, doesn't matter to me because I'm like, you know, I can just change the shape of my. And then his nose starts bleeding. He's like, oh fuck, he can punch me in the soul. This is bad. this is real bad. I'm in a lot of trouble. But he's like, because he's thinking, I was like, okay, I need to do this. So if I just keep killing everyone in that gymnasium, eventually I'll get his curse to come out. And it's like, but can I even beat this guy? This is a toughie. So he's not 100%. There's some good bits with the fight where him like doing the shape-shifting thing where he's turning into like whips and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. It's all like, you know, trying to just get close enough so you can get a hand on Yuji and like, oh, let's transmogrify him. And then it's get the whole thing with Sukuna. It's like, oh, hands off, occupied, buddy. There's somebody in here.
Yeah, I'll let you off because we had a good laugh at him earlier, but do not fucking try this again. This is your one and only warning. And he's just like, oh, so I can't change the shape of his soul. I'm in a lot of fucking trouble here. And then his teacher shows up and his teacher's like, hey, how come his nose is bleeding? And he's like, I punched him. What? Like, just there? He's like, no, ages ago. And he's like, so my power doesn't work on him, but your power does. So we're both just going to fucking dogpile on him. That's the plan.
Yeah.
And he said, "I'll lecture you and explain how my power works later." No time for that right now.
Well, there is no time for that right now. That's where it ends off, and
yeah,
we'll find out how it goes. You'll end on that. It's as good as well as really kind of well setting up how Mahito is the counterpart to Yuji, because he even says it himself. Here's somebody who might need doesn't work on. His technique does work on me, and he seems to be morally opposed to killing anybody except for me right now. He's like my natural predator.
And yeah, that's the first time he says it, all right.
And
he's also thinking, it's like, I got to make this guy mad enough and, like, really pissed at me enough in order to bring out Sukina. But, and it's like, but he's not even sure. It's like, yeah, but he's really good at fucking me up. Like, he's the one guy who's the best at fucking me up. Tough one.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, it's a point that I think we've been arrived at sooner, but
yeah.
We're not privy to production schedules, or indeed how they might have been impacted by events this year. So,
sure.
Though I do wonder whether that's just that director's style.
Could be.
Based on watching another one of his series this year and kind of feeling similar pacing problems. Was there a gag thing after the credits, or was it too serious to put a gag thing after the credits?
It was a bunch of curses playing Pop-Up Pirate.
Oh, yeah.
Like the weird small curses playing Pop-Up Pirate in a playground. I think that was that it? I think that was it.
Pretty much it. You know, you got to have your mandatory Pop-Up Pirate in anime.
Yeah.
Yes.
Plenty of that. It's the Sport of Champions and curses, you know, the same. Which is why they're the real humans.
Then we've got With a Dog and a Cat, Every Day is Fun, episode 12, in which the first story is about the dog and the cat's different attitudes to investigating their owner while she's sitting on the toilet.
Dog is like a small boy in that it likes poop and pee. Which, I mean, yeah, yeah. That's a dog. Yeah, that's fair.
What you do? More curiosity. Yes. Like, what you doing? What you doing? Are you pissing? Are you shitting? Are you pissing down shit?
I did like the dog's nose getting very long as it's trying to poke its way into the door.
Yeah, it does. Like whenever a dog shoves its head under like a gate or something like that, that's definitely what it feels like. Yeah, very careful.
They're elastic as well. It isn't just cats.
And she's like, oh no, God, the cat's coming as well. Then the cat comes in, looks
like,
at her.
Hey, what's going on in here? Oh my God.
Disgusting.
You go on a box next to the sink. How are you so high and mighty?
And then the second one is about the cat as a kitten when it met the elderly dog she used to own and just would headbutt it repeatedly.
And she'd separate them, put like the little baby separating thing between them, and it would still like try and buzz past it to headbutt that dog.
My cat was, he was such a little bat when he was young. He's a bit, you know, he's kind of calmed down to an extent now. He's more sinister, but he's a little bastard when he's young. Wait a minute, cat behavior book. Why do cats do that anyway? And they're headbutting you with because they want to tell you they love you. My cat, he's a sage.
He was such a sweetie pie.
See, I don't know. Well, it's weird because I think that's one of the first things I learned about cats, having a cat.
It was our first cat, so maybe at the time she thought headbutting.
That's true, yes. And yeah, it seems like, was that when she was still a kid or was she an adult?
She was an adult, but obviously the dog.
Yeah, she was an adult then, yes. That's probably it. Whereas I had parents to tell you that's what the cat was doing when it was headbutting you.
Yeah.
Quite often when you're on the phone. I love you more than whatever's on the other end of that plastic thing you're talking to.
Well, they know that, you know, when the phone makes a noise, they go to the phone and pay attention to that. So if I go to where the phone is, when the buzzes, they pay attention to me. Gotcha.
Perfectly logical creatures, yeah.
Yeah. I just occasionally hear my friend's cat when we're playing Tabletop Simulator, trying to hit the mouse pad.
No coaching, cat.
That was it. It was cute and fun, as always. Then, I don't know if anyone else watched it, but I watched episode 1 of Vlad Love.
Did not have time, unfortunately.
Vampire Girl, bloody excited.
Yeah, it is bloody excited.
I was bloody excited by this as well. So, this is Mamoru Oshii, Junji Nishimura, working for a brand new way of making anime. Ichigo Inc. is the company. They're all about sustainable everything, by the looks of things. And one of the things they're interested in is anime. So yes, they're Japanese sustainable infrastructure company, according to Wikipedia. And as the TV show says, if you want to know more, go read it on Wiki. But that, in this case, it's about how blood groups work. And it, this episode's... I mean, there's a few extra characters, but it really is just three people in this first episode. So, what is our main character's name? It is Mitsugu Bamba.
Get it right. A,
yes, not Bamban. Again, there's some puns here which are not explained in the English language translation.
No, to be fair, it was the YouTube subtitle attached to it, so they may not be able to go into as much depth or elaborate detail with the things as other services. So, but the gist of it is there.
Yes, she is obsessed with having her blood drawn.
She gets off on it. It's pretty obvious.
No, it's a big secret, Niall. No one's supposed to know about it.
So I assume it's not like getting the euphoria similar to being drunk when you lose a bunch of blood. It's like, no, it's sexual gratification then, right?
Seems to just enjoy the thought of, this blood's going to cause him to someone else's veins and giving them life, like a little bit of meat inside there.
Okay, that's a very different thing than the euphoria of just being lightheaded.
But it's also because she can't give her blood to anybody because she's got a chimera blood type, as is explained in the second half of the episode.
Okay.
So, yes, she's constantly harassing the blood drive van. The people are fed up in there, fed up with seeing her. But then a foreigner, a blonde foreigner, also arrives in the van and faints. And they try and draw her blood, but she wakes up, goes berserk, punches the nurses in the face, and the van ends up blowing up. But they got away with
it. We've woken up with this vampire, or is it a vampire? And just knocking him out, and then, oh my god, get after him, it's making a scene. It's like, but why did it explode? Was that blood flammable?
But then they've got a bag of Mitsugu's blood. I think. Is it Mitsugu's blood or is it another bag?
Herself, you know, just, it gets in the fridge, didn't know what to do with it. It's like, because you can't give it away to anybody, obviously. But for vampires, it's totally cool.
Yes. And so she, takes the blood. She's like, oh, why don't you just bite me if you want some more blood? And this is my Vlad Transylvania, is the blonde girl. And she's explaining how terrible it is to be a vampire. And why she's in Japan is because she had falling out with her dad's 49th wife, which I do like the story she tells. Mitsugu is slightly different to the one we see in the flashback.
Yes.
Because really she's just mad at the wife for not preparing her blood for her. The wife's like, people in this family have to go and get their own blood when they turn 10. And so she hid in a freight... container, that's the word I was looking for. She was supposed to be going to another part of Europe, but somehow she's washed up in Tokyo.
There might be a creepy doll involved. The cops are just like going to take a raid on probably some illegal cargo and they find nothing inside the container but a creepy doll. Shed a share.
Yeah, there's everything up with her, and there's a few bits of doubt as to whether or not she's a vampire.
She's something.
She's something, that's for sure. She's
quite creepy to a medical professional. I'm forgetting to describe
But Mitsugu's father is away on business for the month, and so therefore, why don't you stay here? And Mai agrees, and then she goes to sleep in the cupboard. Just like a previous Mamoru Oshii Junji no Shimura show.
And, vampires.
Also got pointy teeth, yes. But Mitsugu is much happier about having a weird woman stay in her cupboard because she's not a Taro Moriboshi and she's not going to look a gift horse in the mouth when a beautiful woman plonks herself on her lap.
Refreshing.
it is, but she is also slightly lecherous. But specifically for Mai, not for every single woman. There's definitely like some comparisons they're deliberately making to Ataru, but in some ways not.
Yeah.
And then we get to the second half of the episode where we get the third character, who is another stand-in for Yurisai Asura characters, as we meet the school nurse.
So is this just like a greatest hits kind of thing?
Yes. Oh, yeah. The school they go to is, what's it's got like a very Christian name to
Holy
it as well.
Holy Cross Academy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's about Rueshi just rolling through the hits, but in some way, like, taking the mickey out of them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we meet Shihiro Shibatsurai, who is also a blood maniac, but in a different way, it turns out. Her life's work is doing research on rare blood types, which is why twice a month she draws blood from Mitsugu. But Mitsugu wants her to draw it again because she's got this vampire to feed. Then the vampire shows up and they study her, and she just appears to be an entirely normal human until he put a wrist in front of her, and then she grows teeth and little bat wings fly out of her head.
Might be a vampire. Just guessing.
Yes.
Outside chance it could be a werewolf, but we'll hold on judgment.
Mm.
And so yeah, they come to an agreement, but the terms of the agreement is that she can't just draw constantly blood from Mitsugu, and there might be other people who really like their blood being drawn in school. So why not let's just start a blood donation club?
That may well do, you know, in terms of maybe the wider world. I'm not sure, like, the couple of hundred kids going to the school.
The opening credits suggests differently. Well, that yes. There will be.
This is a school for creeps.
Then there wouldn't be a TV show.
Yeah.
It very much is a school for creeps because, we should make some other details. Occasionally Mitsugu thinks so hard that other characters can hear her thoughts.
Yes. Wow.
To the point where at one point she's thinking that Chihiro, because she's talking about morals and ethics, and she's like comparing her to like, oh, you're the sort of unpopular actress who'll say she'll never take her clothes off in a role. And then you get a caption, inevitable artistic move. And we see Chihiro is now completely naked sitting in the school nurse's office. But all self-censored. We get these self-censorship marks covering anything. But she's drawn incredibly realistically naked. Like, far more realistically naked than you'd see in an anime character normally.
Yeah, it's there's more that belongs in a high level, different genre of anime altogether. But it is like, yeah, this is, you know,
it's like, yeah, it's like all the folds of skin, yes, and like everything just sagging incorrectly. And the same way she's a chain smoker, but you can tell the damage the chain smoking has done to her from her facial features as well.
Yeah, the same as Mitsugu as well. It was always funny giving her blood away. She's got these very heavy bags under her eyes. So, there's people, you know, they are slaves to their vices, and it's like you can kind of see the toll it takes on them here. It's not really polished up. It's kind of nice. It's just like, it feels a little bit shaky.
To take the things that are stereotypically like unattractive about people and just go like, yeah, it's a character thing.
What it feels like to me is a late night anime from 1998,
okay,
where people hadn't settled on to what a late night anime should look like or behave like yet. And so they were throwing everything against the wall. And it really does feel a lot different to anything else. Because we don't even, there's like a visual style as well. He'll do they do these like close-ups. So you'll see, they'll leave the scene in, but then they'll cut within the scene to like a block of a close-up on a face.
They split screen kind of job there, and even like just the way the backgrounds and rusted worlds and the characters are, it looks like a very faded or damaged photograph of it sometimes. Like there was like something was dripping onto this background, and now the color is all kind of peeled away out of it.
Was it blood dripping?
It may have been. And interestingly then as well, when you go to an aerial wide shot of the city, it's all like a live-action helicopter shot.
Yeah, okay.
Just like there's lots of little things just to, I guess, keep your eyes moving from scene to scene. It's got its motifs that it enjoys using, but it's, I think it actually just throws him in there with like the right amount of regularity. It doesn't feel like it's kind of very erratic. It's like, it's a bit about blogger who's like a bit more of an interesting visual swerve about it. Just anything else as well. It's you can really kind of feel like, we are trying a few different things here to start with, and I can get this feeling that they're just going to go bananas with that in the very near future.
Yeah. I don't know what the release schedule for this is.
Because this was just a preview, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They describe it as like a special version of the first episode. And I don't know whether it is always all being released on YouTube or what the deal is.
Or is YouTube to get attention on it, yeah.
I will simply wait eagerly for more of it because I enjoyed it a lot. I think my expectations were not super high because it's been a while since I've liked anything Mamoru Oshii has done. But I guess Junji Nishimura is there as well, and Kei Yamamura is co-writing it, who did stuff for Irresponsible Captain Tyler and some of the live-action Pat Labor, which isn't necessarily a plus in my book, but at least it might mean that the dialogue isn't quite so navel-gazing as it sometimes can be when Oshii's allowed to write it all himself.
Yeah, it's definitely different, but it doesn't feel entirely out of place in his time either, because it's got a monster girlfriend in it.
Yes.
there's lots of things that are very familiar to it. And if anything as well, like, he's one of the dudes who is, like, very well known for having, like, the supernatural paranormal girlfriend, like, type of show to begin with. So, in a way, it makes sense. Yeah. He might come back and want to have a go at it.
Yeah, and the trailer definitely makes it look like he's going to be referencing other stuff he's worked on, because there's action shots which look like Pat Labor and some stuff which, even in this, there's like little bits which feel like calls back to Angel's Egg, like in the like the recounting of what's going on in Europe. Is done in an entirely different art style to the main show. Yeah, it's great. It's on YouTube. It's free. Watch it.
Give it a look. Get excited.
Yeah, or be a young person and can't see what the... I do worry that it is aimed at people, not even my age, people older than me, with its gag about the 10th leader of the Japanese Socialist Party, a party which I believe has not existed since 1996. But that's fine. It's fine. It's good that such an anime can exist without having to wrap it up in Haybot. Righty-ho. Next up is Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, Episode 12, The Collaborative Zapple. In which our boys come up with a plan, or Pop comes up with a plan specifically. How are we going to get past that armor which deflects magic? Well, what if we just shoot it with lightning?
Because it's metal. It's... It conducts electricity.
Yes.
But it's so magic metal. Yeah, but it's still metal. It'll probably work, trust me.
Metal is metal.
So that's what the heroes get to do this. They were saved by an old guy who's part of the army of the princess, and the princess is fine. She's being guarded by the three best sages.
Yeah, she said, we'll just back up and wait for Dai to arrive and sort everything out.
Yes, and they're like, ooh, better not tell him that we failed in sorting everything out. Because really, they're just trying to like, oh, let's get this spell together, we'll go and rescue Mom.
So it's like an ultimate hero spell that only heroes can do, but I can set up the weather conditions so you can do it easy. So we just need to practice doing it.
Yep. And so they do that. Meanwhile, the best part of the episode is all the monster soap opera.
Yep.
Haldar's coming down with the boys. He's going to go by for inspection to see if Hyunkel, if you killed that guy yet. So then I got it all sorted out. And he wasn't nothing to fun. Said, are you sure? Are you sure you got him? Like, I'll take
he's basically there to run interference on his own men, essentially, because he's like, okay, so. I'll go down. I can't interfere, but I can come down there and fucking hassle him. And if he kills Dai, fantastic. Dai's dead. And if he doesn't kill Dai, he looks like an asshole in front of the boss. So I look great.
Just dropping shit like, oh yeah, when Flazard was saying he weren't up to the job. Flazard said that. Well, I don't know about that now.
Yeah.
Also, Haldar appears to be annoyed because Vern had complimented Ho-Yong-Kul's eyes.
Well, like, he's like, well, we can't let him in. He's a fucking human. We're a monster army. And he's like, yeah, but what if my power, like, fades? I don't think putting an undead who are only alive or undead when I'm a, when I get my power as a thing as head of the undead army. We should put a human in charge. So if the undead die, we'll still have an alive guy there in charge. Also, look at them eyes. Wow.
Also, main dude, check it out. He fell in, he became the student of the Dao dude who killed his father just so he could get revenge on him. That's badass. He
That's pretty
to be
cool. Yeah, yeah. I like this guy.
Yeah, you're right, Dark King. That is pretty badass. I gotta give you that one there.
The little conniving wizard guy is like, really, really out of his depth in this. He ends up getting throttled and thrown around.
Yeah, and he's like, who masked, like, hey, have you seen Crocodine? Because he legged it before he was cured. He's like, no, I haven't seen Crocodine. And he only would have lost anyway if you told him some bullshit to put him off his game. And he's like, fucking what? Out there. So much monster politics is great.
Yeah, and Marm gets under his skin enough that his chivalry completely disappears and he slaps her. And then Gomei comes and breaks her out. And they find some treasure.
Find some very important plot treasure.
Treasure, you know. This could be like a super... Is it a secret room, so probably super good. Or it could be a mimic. What's it called in a mimic? Candy box, that's it.
That's what they call them. Like... I assume, like, I'm guessing it doesn't work like in Dark Souls, where you just hit it with the sword a few times to see if it's alive.
You got a little token, you know, that prevents healing within a certain range. And then, anyways, that's all Dark Souls. That's a different kind of RPG.
Different game.
Yes.
Both very hard, though. Some of them.
Mm. This is all happening while the lads have shown up and they're giving Ho-Yong-Kul round two.
Yeah. This like running around. Actually, they do a fucking speed run of that dungeon. They don't get into any small fights. It's like, okay, you guys gonna go in there, we're gonna get ma'am and get out because you can't do this spell underground. So we're gonna run away from these dudes. And luckily, we've emerged in a coliseum that's in the open air, or appears to be at least.
Yeah, and the uncle is kind of like, I'm so fucking cool. I'm not even gonna use my sword bit of my hat to attack you. And he's just kind of he's whipping it around, but he isn't really like doing anything else on it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, eventually he has to say, well, if it's a gruesome death you seek, which I thought was a great line.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
I'll end you with my blade of hell. And this is that. Basically, they're just trying to goad him into doing that.
We can shoot lightning
into his
face.
Into a giant lightning conductor.
It definitely worked. It's definitely out for the count.
It definitely didn't look like it was a sweet fucking fight next thing in the preview. No way. He's done.
Again, it was another bit where, because of the summoning clouds to bring electricity down, I was like, is that another dragon? Is that another One Piece influence on Nami's techniques?
Oh, yeah.
With the climate act.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we do get Pop and Dai explaining why you couldn't go full power against him because he relates too much to him. He's like, well, if someone had killed my monster dad, I'd probably done the same thing.
Yeah, it's fair. I get where he's coming from. Also, Pop in his training, Pop's ripped. I didn't realize.
It's all the layers,
I think. You know,
he's getting up there now. He's gotten serious. You know, he's got someone to compete against now. So he's got
that's true.
Yeah, that's sort of it as well. Like, you know, he was like the kind of cowardly, fucking devious character was usually, you know, kind of crap. But he has his moments where he pulls through. He's kind of cool, like very Usopp. Like again, it's like some of the best fights in One Piece are always the ones where like here is somebody who wouldn't ordinarily not have a single chance, but they do the one thing that matters, the one thing that you didn't think of, or because they use their wits about that, and it's so satisfying because this is somebody way outclasses him, but you got one over on them.
Yeah.
I can imagine Mam to work with it as well. She's not like super angry at her uncle who's actually trying to appeal to him and saying, your dad wouldn't have wanted you to be doing this kind of shit now. Well, you know, I know he was in the dark game, but he sounds like he was totally sound, so this isn't what you wanted to do. And it's like, shut up! Smack.
Too close to the heart of the matter there, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, that fight next week does look pretty awesome. It looks like they're back to some crazy camera angle stuff.
Yeah, that's nice. I admire him as well. Just like in comparison to things that are having pacing problems, this is a guy paced with right, because they could have spent all episodes learning how to do the team up lightning bolt. They got it done before the eye catch, and then they have it deployed and used on them before the end of the episode. It's like, okay, that's good. That's really good. It's keeping this fucking clipping along. It's great.
Like, not much happened in this episode, but there was a lot of development with the characters and that stuff. So I've zero problems with it. It's doing excellently in that regard.
I really like the villains in this. Because it feels like they've all got their own individual motivations beyond just serving their dark master. It's like,
yeah, like the dragon guy under him is kind of like, I can take his job though, you know. They're all got their own shit going on. It's really fun.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Then a final episode, it's Gal and Dino episode 12, going out to eat and so peaceful, in which we learn that Dino is a great guy, or it, because they do refer to him as it.
I'm guessing there's like, do we know what the gender of Dino is?
I don't know. I think that might be development we may get in the next season when we get properly get introduced to the second dinosaur who's introduced to this.
There was never just one.
Dino's a great listener, I'm guessing, because it doesn't talk. So
it doesn't talk, yes.
Initially she's ringing, her friend is ringing her up. It's like, hey, Dino's at Starbucks. Should I do something? It's like, no, he's allowed to be at Starbucks. Dude, I was fucking sleeping it in. I'm hungover.
She had just done a night shift, Wayne. Thank you very much.
Sorry. She's going to be hungover the next day. That's probably what I'm getting my timing mixed up. You're quite right. So her friend's just like, I'm going to go over and talk to Dino. It's like, hey, how's it going? Do you mind if I rant about my boss for a bit? Just unloads on him. And he's cool with it.
He's cool with it. Yeah, it's been super cool, dude. It's just like, gives kind of the robocall wink. It's like, that's okay, master. I'm a good listener. Then Kaida calls him back and says, hey, sound like you're a bit down on the phone. You all right? Fun today? I feel all right now. Dino was, you know, actually being a really good, let me kind of vent for a bit of fun. Saying, come vent with you. Go to the pub together. Yeah, that sounds good. Okay. Mm-hmm. They all went down the pub.
And then Dino gave us a wink again. And then the first super short is Dino and a cat wondering whether a bug is dead.
I have the name here. A Strong Cicada.
That's it.
Yeah. I liked I like a lot about these things, but I did like the thing getting closer and closer to the end is like him poking it, kind of. That's on the timer. On the timer bar, I guess.
Yeah. I really like the light effects, the textures on this one. Particularly right at the end when you get the cat and the Dino acting super panicky because it suddenly sprung to life.
I kept giggling more as Dino was sweeping the streets in the background, the cicada's right up there in the front, and there's kind of the little weird waddle from the foreground to the background that it does.
They do these things quite very two-dimensional animation, kind of like Aardman does, even with CG stuff. But this one, they used like a lot of that depth really quite well.
The Where's Dino is really weird because it's a bunch of other creatures who aren't quite Dino.
I thought I saw the right one, and then I was like, oh, okay, that was actually it. I see what was wrong about the one I was looking at. And then I went back and like looked at all of them because that was fun to do.
Duck, a reindeer, a chicken. all sorts of things. And then So Peaceful is, they're just chilling out. It's very peaceful. There's possibly nothing happening in the world. Not just is nothing happening for us, there's nothing happening in the world.
Like, there's clearly a rescue helicopter out in the fucking world, out the window, but they're just like, ah, it's probably fine, everything's probably grand.
Yes. And then the punchline, yes, we see that there is other stuff going on. There's an egg. Meanwhile, elsewhere, an egg is hatching and a small yellow dinosaur emerges.
It seems to be kind of prophetic almost, as dinos seem to be like, oh, you're pretty good at it, cracking eggs into the bowl for making breakfast. But, well, to be natural, I've been cracking eggs since the day I was born.
Yeah, like he's trying to like go back to the thing, but then it's like, ding dong, dinosaur, can you get the door? And it's just like, oh yeah, no bother. Because he's trying to remember, it's like, wait a minute, why am I so good at cracking an egg? Let me think back to my past, But he doesn't get the chance to.
They watch a film as well, and they, yeah, it's, but yeah, then we get the final short, Dino, where they're wandering, and then a small yellow dinosaur carrying a purse and reading a map stops Dino to ask for directions. So Dino gives them directions, and then Dino stops, and you think,
like, he has the thought bubble where it's like, tail, spiny back, fucking dinosaur face. Wait, am I go back here?
I gave them the wrong directions.
I said go right, but I meant go left. Sorry.
I almost sent that other dinosaur in the wrong way. That would have been embarrassing.
And when it comes back, like, that dinosaur still hasn't found where he's going, so I'm guessing the directions were still fucking wrong.
Yeah.
Mm.
And Ben has got like this giant sign trying to get to.
He's trying to get to a certain part of Japan. Yeah, yeah.
He is.
Down there on the west coast, the Midwest.
Mm. Yeah.
And then the up next bit is something called "It's in My House." I got drunk and brought home a T-Rex, which appears to be an entirely different story about some sort of Brachiosaurus which got drunk and brought home a T-Rex.
Like a realistic both of those things. Yeah. It's great.
But except the Brachiosaurus is on its hind legs with its fists up.
Yeah. Well, it brought home its natural predator, so that's glad.
Oh, it's like something from Wave, listen to me.
And then Dino goes to the beach in the live action, where he's picked up in a taxi by his former flatmate from the first two episodes.
Doesn't even recognize him.
No.
Because the timeline was changed, remember? By
He's used the life note to change the how everything went down.
Why did they make this melancholy? That's not fucking fair to do at the end of the show.
Well, it's bittersweet. You know, it's gonna be over sometime.
He was crying. An old man was crying at the beach. That's sad. I don't need to see that.
But it's all right because you can see how well Dino is getting on with Kylie.
Even though he's never met this dinosaur before, he just feels like he has to cry because of how well he's getting on. Yeah, it's I do wonder how much this would have played differently if everything had run according to schedule and
they weren't limited by their live action dinosaur stuff by COVID.
Yes. Yeah,
I did enjoy the shots of the dinosaur trying to mope on the beach, and then there's like a bunch of kids going like, is that a fucking guy in a dinosaur suit, like, in the shot? It's very funny.
I love when you get the rubber knickers.
Yeah.
Who doesn't know what the hell is going on with this? I suppose less of those with these, this batch in the back half.
But yeah, at least the stuff with the yellow dinosaur does suggest that they're planning more.
Mm.
And obviously there's more to adapt, because they don't adapt all that much each episode anyway. So.
Yeah.
This seems much more likely to come back than Pop Team Epic. It seems a little less effort to bring it back than Pop Team Epic. Trouble
as well.
I think it was a shame it wasn't on at a time it was meant to be, and probably for longer, because I think a lot of the vibe it's putting down was be comforting to people.
Yeah.
During one of this year, because there was something about us, like, well, it's got a dinosaur in it. Usually the events and stakes are very ordinary. And
yeah.
There's so much time is given over to them. It's fun hanging around or watching telly, or Kaida's on her phone and Dino is eating like instant noodles. Mm. And that's probably how a lot of people's days have passed. And that's kind of thing as well. This is the way a lot of your days pass anyway. And that's the way things are, really. You shouldn't feel...
It's a nice, silly, but pleasant mirror.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you feel like you should be doing something, but you can't. I mean, that's all right. You gotta make time for doing nothing, which they sum up quite well in this last little segment, in the animated portion.
Mm.
Well, there are 4 volumes of the manga translated, but of course it is under the different name of My Rumi is a Dino.
Mm.
Rumi.
That's yes. I think the word like Rumi or whatever it's translated from is like a very gal word for it or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be so back, certainly.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the soundtrack was available over here. I shall have to investigate that. Because I could get all the Pop Team Epic stuff. But I think that was sub-licensed.
Oh.
But I don't know whether that company's still sub-licensing that sort of stuff. Or indeed if King Records have loosened up their geo-blocking.
Mm.
I mean, I can still get it. I've still got a bunch of money on Japanese iTunes, so I could just finally spend that money I've put on there. But there you go. Because the music is a very good thing about it as well, and really helps set the tone. And that would be another way to recapture the tone beyond just watching 12 episodes of Gal and Dino again.
Yeah,
I hope when it comes back, they still do the thing of like kind of mess around with different artists and different styles and different kinds of directions for their shorts. Because I was enjoying that in this back half of it. They were already doing it in the first half as well, but. It was nice to see like different people just have a hand at it.
Yeah, I don't know if this is there. Do we know if there's anything else coming up from Kamikaze?
Because
obviously they do some weird stuff, don't they?
Don't know. Yeah. They won't be. They'll find something to do. Which will be very small. Need a dino soundboard though. You can react to things. Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, the reggaeton, the Star Wars noises. Yeah.
Weet, weet, weet.
Next up, we've got another final episode. Gymnastic Samurai, episode 11. Gymnastic Samurai. yeah, this was the one where I was like, oh... This was the wrong episode for it to start not looking so good.
It has some bits that look nice, but yeah, a bunch that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But as a story, it all ties itself together nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't dwell on explaining stuff too much. It just goes for emotional moments. The main one is Ray just giving that speech to Leo.
Just
from one of her mum's films, yeah, at the airport.
But like doing a really good rendition of it to the point where everyone fucking yes. claps.
It's like all everyone of neighbors is just like, oh, that's very good. No, it wasn't 2003 and Twitter existed. She'd be a real hit right now.
Yeah.
It's not going to explain why Big Bird can fly. It's not going to explain why the granny has a nitrous fucking thing in her car. Well, I don't care, because she's cool. That's a good enough reason.
Someone you probably expect to have something like that.
It's like, why does the girl who works in the bar able to fight kung fu against men in black? It's like, because it's rad. That's why.
Yes.
We don't know what they fought kung fu. Yeah,
it's the...
They fought something cool, is what I'm suggesting.
They foreshadowed the nitrous by illustrating that she
could spot... That she was keeping it... That's an unlicensed cop car. I'm not fucking overtaking
yes.
him. It's
yes.
just like the fact that she can eyeball him is just like, oh, okay, she does crimes for sure.
Yeah, they do something to finance his no good son-in-law's gymnastics career.
Yeah.
I did like them loading on all that responsibility to the kid from her school. But you gotta go to the tournament and tell my dad this. And also,
well, everyone was like, she's like, do you think Leo will be okay? And it's like, yeah, he'll be grand. It's probably fine. Like, yeah, I think he'll be okay. And the granny just kind of watching in the car, going like, and then the other kid is like, nah, like he fucking would have said something, like, right? You know, I'm just pointing out. And then the other guys are like, yeah, actually, he probably would have said something. Yes. And so they let that kid, is like, okay, you go tell my dad. It's like, I don't even know your dad. I've only seen him on TV and
you've got to go there because we've got to take the bird with us because he's good luck. Mm. That's the reason. And I do like the fact that they put the seatbelt on the bird. But yeah, so Brittany has to drive them there and he's can't get his voice out over the crowd, so we just get the loud bellowing, a Gary-like bellow, across the room, and then he gets to get his message out.
Like, he even shuts down the commentator. That was a yes. good one.
It's pretty loud. It's the same voice actor who did Tora and Ushio and Tora, and it's done all other things, but it's very much like the kind of growl.
Yeah.
Could be a big lion man on the inside, tiger man on the inside, by mistake.
Mm. Yeah. The one of the men in black who's trying to get Leo to stay successfully delays them long enough that yes, he can make the speech, drag him back, and that's enough to inspire him, or maybe he would have done it anyway.
But I did like the weird one was like clearly like trying to slow them down. It was like, no, there's someone coming for the lift. I gotta open it again. Yeah. Sorry, guys, sorry. And then with the other one, she's like, hey, are you fucking with bringing him back? And she's like, and your one's like, all right, I'm gonna let this play out. Just like, oh, thanks, buddy.
And yes, Leo being there and his daughter being there is enough to make him go into some sort of Lidl version of Ultra Instinct. And
it's the samurai fucking shape of his soul. Whatever.
It's some pencil drawings of flames coming around him. Mm. And he does all the things that he needed to do because earlier he'd not botched the landing, but the landing wasn't as good as it could have been, and that cost him a few points. Yes,
point two or point one was the gap between him and Minamino.
And Minamino was totally on his fucking game that day, to the point where he was trailing by 2 points at one stage, but then he was only trailing by like 1 point for the it's not the parallel bars. What do you call the
vault?
The spinny round bar. I can't think of the fucking name for gymnastic things after watching the show.
But yeah, for the story, it was like the idea was that because Jotaro was pushing himself, it was pushing the kid as well.
Yeah.
To better himself. Whereas in the previous episode, it got into his head.
See, that comes across, I think, in the other gymnast kind of looking at him. It's like, what's this kid? He's a monster. And it's like, but they're both kind of pushing each other to higher heights. Yes. And it comes across in their dialogue when they're trying to discuss it, because they're trying to do better as well, even though they can't catch up at this stage.
Yeah, they can't quite figure it out. It seems like these two dudes were both so good at this. They're just sort of just kind of doing their thing. They're not like letting anybody else really fucking think. I was like, I see.
Yeah.
That's what I get from Johto as well. He wanted to, he got this good. He got this stage because he loves gymnastics. He loves like performing it. He loves doing it for his family and how excited he gets about it. Mm. And he wanted to get back onto this level again to compete at this because he just loves it that much that he got really that feeling again, certainly. Getting fired up with like an opponent or like a fellow competitor who's doing the same match that you're doing.
I did like the way the commentators are saying, it's like, okay, he just invented some brand new shit, which should have scored higher and he could have done easier things to get the score. But he just kept fucking doing it. What a rad dude.
Because this comes in just in time where like, Leo is there to watch. He can finally just has it. I feel like he was mentally kind of ready for this anyway. He would have like done a pretty good routine. Like nonetheless, it's like there's.
But there was more meaning to it that he could show Leo his gymnastics.
He probably would have been able to do all that, like, no problem, and, you know, and get the score, get a pretty good score. But he needs to show this to Leo. That's the point of it.
Yeah.
I would have been fine. I don't need you in my corner cheering me on. That's nice to have as well. But I kind of owe this to you. You saw me flub this years ago, and it affected you a great deal.
Yeah,
I got to show you that, you know, you need to have that courage yourself to go forward. No, I got up from that failure and got this far. Now you got to do the same and for yourself.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a reversal of it. He's not able to do it because Leo's watching. It's more so that he has to do it for Leo. It's like, I got to support you guys as well. And this is something that you need to see that'll help you. To help you understand what passion is like again, because it's something you've lost, that kind of way.
Yeah. I mean, he's fine. There's this emphasis and these moments of stillness and silence with him. He's like really fucking in the zone there. He's coming into his inner self, you know, then broken concentration when they run in and they're all cheering for him, but whatever. But there's like, as well, like little moments where he's in the middle of his routine on the bar and it's just spinning around the thing. It's going at a fucking crazy velocity, but it's this little like shots of him. He's just following him in the middle of that center of gravity. He's just like very calmly breathing and then just going with the moment, going with the flow. And he's fucking really good. He's creating things. He's performing things no one's ever seen on the fly. He's a gymnastics artist. That's his passion. He's letting it flow. When he's flowing out like that, when he's like let loose to do it, he can do incredible things. But it's just for the passion of it, for the sport. He isn't doing it for the glory. He just wants to do it so well and so good. So it's fun.
Yeah, I wonder if the point is that he wouldn't have tried the pike and he wouldn't have tried the quadruple landing.
He would have probably went with the quadruple landing because that was the thing. It was the triple landing.
It was the triple on the bar was the thing which had screwed him up before. But he does that and he does it with a pike as well.
Yeah.
That's where they think that he's not going to do it. And then he does the quadruple landing coming off. I feel like those are the two things he hadn't been practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like because Leo's there and his daughter's there, then that gives him the confidence.
Yeah.
But he's trying to spur him on with his performance, but he is being spurred on by their, like, it's a little of both. Like, it's give and take.
I find that sense, he's kind of deciding, like, mid-revolution, it's like, no, fuck it. Yeah, I will do that one. I will do that. No. I can probably handle it. And then goes for it. And he fucking lands it and he gets an unbelievable score. it was very just like that kind of sports movie. You call it kind of cheesy, but I think this has earned a little bit of it was fun. Like, he won the thing. He got the incredible, probably record breaking score that shouldn't, but never normally happen in competition like this. But fuck it, this is TV. Let's let him have this. Yes. It's really nice. This
and also we're not going to tell you what happened in the 2 years intervening before we see him. At the end of the episode.
Yeah, what's he doing now? Don't know.
Don't know. This story is not concerned about what he does beyond this one tournament.
Yeah.
We just check in to see that Leo's got his confidence back. He's now performing in Swan Lake at 20 years old. And I like the older character design. It looks like, he's distinctly grown up a bit.
Mm. Yeah, he looks like more confident and mature in himself. While also, it nearly looks like he's lost weight or something. So he's gotten bigger with the same weight or something like that. Because obviously they did that with the kid as well, because she had a growth spurt.
Yes.
But yeah. Nice to see.
Mm. Yeah, and so that's your happy ending. Roll credits.
Lots of little nice little threads wrapped up there.
I liked how subtly they wrapped up subtly. I mean, like, how little focus they put on it of your man. It's like, you should expect that after one man you admire at gymnastics.
Yes.
I was like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Mm. But between, like, you know, him, he got rid of his armbands from the last event. And then
maybe he grew past them.
And then as well, like, you know, he just takes off the headband and the scar stuff and saying, you're fucking, it's a gimmick, it's a crutch. Don't let that be something that defines you. You've got to be defined by your routines, by your skill.
Mm.
Taki and Ayu get the little thing. Ayu says, well, if you're giving messages to Jotaro while we're gone, just give the Taki, say, hey, pretty good routine you got there, rooting for you. And the Taki cues that, like, love. It's all about it.
That's about as much resolution as he gets. It's like confirmation that everything I think is correct.
Yeah, and most importantly of all, Coach Asakusa, his daughter finally texted him back.
She was watching on TV. It was pretty good. Oh my god!
After lamenting earlier on, it's like, oh, when they get to that age, they'll never text it back, Jotaro. You watch out for us, but it's never too late. You'd always be Coach's little girl.
Dear. yeah, everyone gets a little resolution, and it's nice.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, God, even Big Bird confronts its fear of flying. Holy shit, yeah, everyone.
Yes. It was instrumental in installing the plan.
Oh, dear.
It's good. Like, it's kind of similar to Gatlin Dino. It was like very much picking up what it was putting down about you shouldn't let things that you enjoy or kind of get pushed to this extent where they become this thing that you're afraid of or causes you this kind of grief, because it's something you used to enjoy at least, and now it's just something that actively like affects you negatively. And you gotta kind of check yourself about getting that stage, maybe slow down a bit. Again, I think maybe a lot of people are feeling that way around about now, all those things that they don't have to do or shouldn't have to do right now. It's like, yeah, yeah, where was the need of that, all that grief? Not that going around right now. Without putting more of those in there.
Anyway, crack on with some more Zombieland saga, though. As much as I enjoyed this, I was always slightly in the back of my mind, just like, give me more Zombieland saga.
It's not the best thing, it's not amazing, but it was very enjoyable. I'd recommend it watching it, but it's not, like, it wouldn't be on my top recommendations, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the other issue is of the publicized problems Mapper have got with taking on too much work.
Yep.
And then you get this episode, and you're like, yeah, okay.
Shows, yeah, unfortunately.
And they're doing Chainsaw Man.
Yeah, and you can't keep up something like what they've been doing with the Jujutsu Kaisen, say, and then they're doing Attack on Titan right now. And Jesus, they got some...
It's going to suffer, like...
Over many things on the go right now, and we know we'll be on the go very soon. Like, yeah, they really got to slow down. Are they trying to make up for last time or something? I don't know.
Trying to become the studio that just gets it done, but you know, not...
constant influx of cash. Maybe that's the thing they're having.
It's like,
taking it in.
Getting the contracts in, and then like, you know, well, if they're going to keep paying, we'll make it. Hopefully we get.
Anyway, let's talk about a company who can manage their schedules. Niall, tell us about Healing Good Pretty Cure, episode 37. Enjoy the seasons. Hospitality tour for Latte.
Yes, good in their schedules. We're talking about autumn in the week of Christmas. But that's understandable. They had their little delays as everything did. They never thought about how great autumn is and what you can do in autumn. You can, play some sports. You can go to the park and have a picnic, but make sure you're a good member of the public and don't believe in litter after if you go for a picnic, because the community people will go around and they'll pick it up afterwards, but you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. So we will, as talking animals hide in bushes and chide you for throwing your dirty cans into the hedges. It's like, oh my goodness. And then we will shame you into being a good member of society. You can also do things like, what else you can do? You can go and enjoy a nature walk. You can go and walk in the fields and harvest food, but make sure you don't harvest food that isn't yours, because that's going to go to the farmer's market, where the farmer will make his earnings. Like, oh, I see. Autumn is a great time. Autumn is great, and how you should be respectful of things around you. Especially if monsters come along and try to spoil it. What this kind of is animals are kind of enjoying all of this, all the wonders of the human world that this world has to have, and how it's worth saving. It's just like, you know, someday when this war is all over, I'd come back to something like this. But as soon as this war is over, we'll have to be separated from the girls because we wouldn't have a job to do here anymore. It's like, that's right, I'm on a conundrum. After a little showdown with Darius, and it was just as well, if you just want to stay here and keep the war going, just don't do nothing. And then you'd always have to be fighting monsters, and you gotta stay here. It's like, no, because that means the world would be destroyed. And maybe one day, when we get back from this tour of duty, we'll be able to come back whenever we want, visit the world without needing to having to fight a monster to do so. It's like, yeah, that's right, man. We should pray for that day. And this is reaching the animals of the healing garden as well, who aren't just little flying penguins and rabbits and stuff. There's also, like, I guess the two head soldiers there, who are like a lion and a tiger wearing armor. The tiger has got like one eye, it's wearing an eye patch, in fact. like, oh, why could indeed be the animal partners? These guys are class. Oh, that's said to be for a spin-off or for the to need like a power up before the end. And it's like, who's going to be the magical girl to you guys with bond must? Yeah. This is a very good little thing about, you know, how nice Autumn is. More serious next time, was after being confronted with the possibility. If you, nearly a few episodes back, GM must decide over a future. Are you going to inherit the inn? Or are you going to be a world record high jump? What's it going to be? Can she do both? Find out on the day after St. Stephen's Day. Ooh.
Right. And then finally, we've got Moriarty the Patriot, episode 11, The Two Detectives, Act 2. You were right. Watson has not been stabbed. He's merely splattered with blood and a suspect in the murder.
Ooh. The train police are here, and they're going to arrest him. I mean, like, I guess it makes sense to have a couple of guys, but these guys, like, as they're pointing out, it's like, yeah, these guys aren't good at solving crime. They're just like, blood on you. You do the blood crime.
And I guess I'm called Bollock Brains by Sherlock Holmes.
Again, this was the point, dialogue, man. Yeah.
I know. This was the point I was like, oh no, that's one of the things I hadn't thought about with the Funimation Crunchyroll buyout is more of this, but I'm going to guess that it reduces the competition for translators.
Oh.
And so they can be paid less, and that maybe that will
take
better ones out because they won't want to.
Mm.
There we go.
Shit.
Come on, Netflix, license more stuff.
There could be an untranslatable loan word in Japanese that only equivalent is bollock brain.
Was it the Galandino thing? You had Kede saying like, "Oh, that's such a mood" or something like that.
The Galandino one isn't quite so bad, I find, but maybe it would be if I was American. It's just someone's clearly making an effort in.
Yeah.
Moriarty the Patriot to make the character sound British, and by doing so makes them not sound British.
Yeah. This is like, what's a British insult? Bollock.
The British, they say loo, don't they? That's something Watson would say.
A military doctor would fucking say.
Yep. They say that word and only
that
word.
You could
say
the facilities or something, you know.
Yeah. They're one homogenous mass of white people who all talk the same way. And they're not informed by any other cultures that they may have absorbed
like
or conquered.
In British culture today, and especially back then, it's not that you would have like upper, middle, and lower class people who would have completely different vocabularies. No.
And it's not like that's what this show's about.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. It's just like, yeah, if you want to use bollocks as a thing, cool. Have Moriarty's goons fucking say that, because that's more their fucking line of thing. But, like, no.
Yeah.
Not Sherlock Holmes.
There was a line they say about Lestrade, like the cops have heard of him.
Oh,
as
you're
like
the
being
competent
the one
guy.
The competent guy from.
He's like, yeah,
Scotland Yard.
He's like, he doesn't want Lestrade doesn't want to admit that's sarcastic. that's a sarcastic compliment people give me.
They do get the names of York, Doncaster, and Grantham spelt right, but then when we see a sign for Durham later, it's spelt wrong.
Mm.
They get the train. I think they get the trains. I mean, this is a journey I am very well familiar with, this train journey.
So you were like, yeah, that's how long it takes, all right?
Can't pull the wool over your eyes.
No. I'm trying to think, is this the... this line is the one I've travelled on the most in my life. Not the Doncaster to Grantham bit of it, but... I have done that a fair bit as well, because I would come in from Grimsby to Doncaster and then go down that way.
For you to solve.
It is the perfect mystery for me to solve. So yes, they decide that they convince them that Watson's not doing it, but they say we're gonna have to take him into custody anyway.
He's suspicious looking. So we got nothing else. It's like just this guy with blood on him who says, "I didn't do it, I swear."
And they come to the conclusion that it's a drug robbery gone wrong. So someone's drugged the guy to rob him. He's
and
a jeweler.
The robbery was botched. He had to kill the guy.
Yes.
And he has to still be on the train, and we have until we reach the next station to find him.
Race here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So Moriarty's like, well, clearly Sherlock's going to figure out this crime by doing it this way, so I'm going to do it a different way.
Also, both of them are such dicks to Lestrade, where they're kind of like in the cabin. It's like, oh, obviously this is a botched robbery where he remembers drug gone wrong. And he's like, really? And it's like, isn't that fucking obvious? Let's put all the pieces in place for you, Lestrade.
Here you go, Dumbo.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I like the way Moriarty's like, obviously he's going to do his way. Obviously he's going to do this, and he's going to come to this conclusion. But I just need to, and he's saying it to the guy. I did like the way his brother was like, brother, we have not committed this crime. What should we do? Like, no. We'll just think like a criminal would think, because we're coming at this from the opposite direction that Holmes is going to come at it from.
Yeah, there's a little element in this one where you think like, oh, is Lewis, like he's possibly more dedicated to the cause than Moriarty is. There's a degree of their cause that is perhaps just an intellectual pursuit for Moriarty himself.
It's similar to Holmes again. Like, he finds it interesting to do. Gets less horny for it, but he's very interested in doing it. Whereas your man's like, I burned my face for this fucking cause as a child. Imagine what I do now.
Yeah, like Lewis feels like this Holmes character is just a distraction. With a brother. Yeah. I don't like him.
Like, I think he literally says, like, as soon as he's not useful, I'm taking him out.
Yes.
No one's going to cuddle my brother except for me.
Yeah, and he's very annoyed at how familiar he's being by calling him Liam.
But that's a terrible nickname. Really?
Well, I feel like Sherlock knows that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why he's using it
you
to get under his skin.
You probably should call an upper-class English noble an Irish name. They probably don't like it.
But Moriarty is also an Irish name, Dwayne.
Maybe
Holmes knows that and is like using that little nugget of information.
I suppose he could be trying to get a dig at him. Like, you're Irish, isn't you? Yeah. Could be. Who knows?
So they come to the conclusion it's one of the staff. Because there's a certain type. No, there's mud on the shoes of the murderer, and
they had to come on from the last station. Because look at his shoes. Because it was raining.
Well, they had to come on from Durham, so it's the first station.
Yeah,
the station they've come on in York was dry, so it's nobody who's come on. So whoever was on was already on the train before the jeweler came on.
Mm.
And then they notice there's loads of these footprints.
Size shoes, but that doesn't tell you too much because. Very common kind of shoe.
Yes. So, but he tried to wash his hands.
Why did he try and wash his hands? And why did he try and wash his clothes and shit? It's because he couldn't
throw his clothes away. And if he wasn't wearing those, that would mean that it's something out of place with you. So it must be one of the staff, because if you're missing either their hat or their vest or their gloves, you'd be wondering where's the uniform at, boy. And that would be even more suspicious.
You're out of uniform as a guy working on the train, so it has to be one of the motherfuckers working on the train. And they've narrowed it down to two guys, because they're the right,
shoes. Yeah. Yes, it's like, I'll show you your hands. Oh, why are your hands wet? Show me your palms. Oh, they're all bloody. And he's like, but no. I cut my palms. That's my own blood. And Sherlock's like, and then Moriarty goes, how did you get blood on your glasses?
I did like the way your man was like, kind of big shit-eating grin. It's like, well, that's circumstantial evidence and not enough to convict me. And it's like, well, you got a bit of blood there and like, a couple other places. Do you want me to point them out to you?
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Surely having a blood splatter when you cut that dude's neck and it just splashed in your face, but you didn't get that bit. And then how he reveals how he fucking did it was really funny to me.
Because it's a magician's trick.
I was watching the wrong thing when he was like, oh, thank you so much, when he shook the guy's hand. I was looking at the monogrammed thing, and it later said, like, oh, they all have like specific, their own monogrammed gloves as the thing. And I was like, okay, is that why they showed me that shot? No, it's because he was doing something at the time.
Yes, because he's cut his own finger, and he'd marked every single member of the staff with blood. And so whichever one Sherlock picked, he could then use the extra bit of evidence
Like, so basically, Sherlock would be like, confess. I'll find out who it is. And it's like, yeah, but that'll be circumstantial evidence. So I'll plant a second piece of evidence, which will convict them. Which is just like, that's dickish, but like, you are technically catching the right guy. And he's like, he's saying, this is a case we should take because a man has been wrongfully accused of murder. And that's bad.
Yeah, but he's trying to think of it from the opposite version. It's like, you know, well, somebody who did this would likely be like this, was going to kind of engineer the circumstance and see what happens. And it could be enough to nudge this out. It's not quite admissible in court, so to speak. But if this coincidentally happens to him up, then...
If we have two circumstantial evidence, we have solid evidence, kind of, or more solid evidence. Whereas, yeah, it's just really funny to me that he just planted evidence of his own blood on every single member of staff.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, see, I really liked it because it is that magician's trick of, like, marking everything and then
marking the cards or whatever. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. And then whichever one you picked, you reveal the mark anyway, and it does it. Yeah. Mm. So it's
always being able to pull out the card you need.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then Sherlock apologizes to Watson and
because he was lamenting. He was like, come Watson, let's I forgot you're arrested. Partway through the fucking case.
Yeah. But then they're being watched by somebody outside the pub, and then we go and see Queen Victoria having a report delivered to her.
Secret spy bunker.
About some stolen documents. And this man doing the reporting is Sir Mycroft Holmes. And that tells me all I need to know about which novel they're adapted next. I believe it's the one about the submarine. Now, whether it's still about the submarine...
Yeah, how much they're going to change and how much Moriarty's going to be involved and shit. Yeah, it's probably subject to change considerably.
Yes, I imagine it would be significantly different because Mycroft Holmes' thing in the book is that he refuses to... He's not made for actually going and doing investigating. He spends all his time in his club. Mm. And then Sherlock has to wander in occasionally and say, I've got this problem, brother, which I can't get my head around. Mm. You're smarter than me, but you don't like to go... You're not inclined to actually go investigating. Can you solve this puzzle? Yeah. Whereas this definitely feels like, oh, they've watched the BBC show. And we're getting a version of that Mycroft Holmes.
Anime Mark Gatiss.
Mm. Yes.
That should be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be. And I assume that will take us to the end of the season.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's entertaining. You gotta give it that.
Mm.
Yes, and it's definitely going to sell a few more volumes of the comic. Unless it just carries on showing up in Shonen Jump, in which case I'll just carry on reading it.
Yeah.
That way.
Mm-hmm. That's still, it's probably going to draw people in. And like you're saying, a lot of the comic seems to be more, if not better written, than more in-depth written. More interesting as a mystery.
I think it's more interestingly written as a mystery. The advantage this has got is that they've done their research and they've made it more historically accurate.
They've tried to spell the town names right and give people realistic names and make Lupin guns, non-Golgo guns.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, it's got absolutely cracking theme tune.
Skip it.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it might be my favourite theme tune of the year.
Mm, it's pretty banger, yeah.
Let's see.
I don't think that's just recency bias, but...
Could be. There might be something else that we're just forgetting from earlier on.
It's either this one or the ending theme to the Jujutsu Kaisen that stays in my head after watching it.
Yeah.
A couple of hours afterwards. In some of them cases, a couple of days afterwards. But I heard them earlier on.
That'll be one to put on the Jujutsu Kaisen. I think it's definitely one I'm going to be putting on like my walking around playlist, where it's just like, oh yeah, I'll just feel fucking great.
End of pandemic celebratory.
Yes, exactly.
Open the door, boom, a cloud, a shower, glitter, laser show. It's
like every time you enter or leave a building, it's like, walking through the door. Just
I'm going to shake someone's hand today.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it to Moriarty over it because the Jujutsu Kaisen one works great as itself, as a song.
Yeah, so it's a really good song.
Whereas the one for Moriarty is just like the nose.
It is a theme song. It's
called setting the scene if you just fucking explicitly say what the plot is about. and where it's going to go. That's probably right. Not really. No,
so lots of things do that. We don't give it up, you know. So why?
Oh, you mean like the rap intro to like a show where it explains the setup and here are all the characters. But this is more so like a thematic song, I think.
That's fine. It works for me either way.
Hey, man, if you get a song that's just explaining how cool Mazinger Z is, so you can have a show about, how cool Moriarty and the gang are going to be killing all the rich people who are keeping us down.
Yeah.
Get excited.
Now I'm wondering whether anyone's done a hand-drawn mad of the Cutie Honey opening with the characters out of Moriarty the Patriot. Talking of themed songs, which are all about telling you how cool the main character is.
Yeah.
Righty ho, that is it for this week. Are we going to be back here next week? I don't see why we don't. I'm not going anywhere.
Let me see.
I have to bring up a calendar to see what days will be grand. Not Christmas Day.
Well, that's only 2 days away.
Oh, it is, jeez, I forget how fucking close we are.
Well, I cannot, because I will be back on the counterpoint to having the Christmas off. That I must have the New Year's period not off, so I'm at work for seven night shifts in a row.
Because you totally got home for this Christmas, thanks fucking,
But oh well, doesn't mean I can't watch things and talk with them about you in the new year, but for next time, you're going to have to go without me, and I will send my best wishes.
Wednesday then, Dwayne?
Yeah, Wednesday should be fine.
We'll be back next Wednesday with more of the same, well, less of the same, because two shows are finished. and I don't think anything's starting until well into the following week.
Just watch Vlad Love again.
I just didn't have time today because Christmas was basically.
Yeah. Exactly. Righty-ho, we'll be back here again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye now.